So, Mind Train, I want to talk about, you know, one of the songs in my double album, Light. And it really is, you know, a funny song. It's like the classic train song, and yet it goes off a little, you know, into a different area. Of sort of non-song song, you know, and it starts off with a choo-choo train bit, you know, and then it goes into something crazy. As I said before, you know, especially Mind Train, all I did was to allow, you know, like allow things to happen, and I was just going on, and it was one take, you know, and the engineer didn't know that it was the final take. They're saying, oh, they're rehearsing and it's great, you know, and I said, no, that's the take. I mean, we can do that again that night, you know, we can go that through that one again. And it was a great trip, you know, when we were doing it. Jim Keltner is on the drum, Klaus Bormann on bass, and Chris Osborne and Natalie, my brilliant husband, John Lennon, on guitar. He leads the whole group so that they can fly with me easily, you know. And I don't think I can just cope with those musicians. The musicians are good, but they need a little lead, you know, leading. And John does that very well because he's very used to it. And with his guitar, you know, like he... And usually my songs, most of my songs are sort of like a basic dialogue between my voice and John's guitar, you know. It really is a dialogue, you know. I start saying something and then John responds to it and then I respond to him and it goes on like that. And if you listen to my music, you see the intricateness of the conversation that we go into, you know, between me and John and then to with Jim Keltner, you know, each one has a certain conversation going on with me and with each other and with John, you know, and it's just, you know, it blows your mind because it's like flying, really, you know. I think this is the song that's really flying in this album, I think, and we just, all of us just, you know, enjoyed the experience a lot.
I know.
What did you think about it, you know?
Oh, the album is unique because there's so much difference in thought and in sound that you're projecting.
Well, the first and the second sides, I call them a side that's like a physical beat, side with a physical beat, you know, to dance to, you know? And then the third and the fourth side is... sort of like a mind beat, you know?
That's
something, you know, mind beat with something to listen to, something to go with it, you know, in your mind. And the other...
I'm curious, it's probably a ridiculous question, but of the things that John has done and cover several books, do you have a personal favorite of something that he wrote?
Oh, I like all of them.
Well, I know that. That's why I said it would be a ridiculous question because you have a lot of choice. But is there one thing
that
really...
You know, he's really brilliant because, you know, people compare him with James Joyce and whatnot. You know, it's almost like comparing me with John Cage or something. No connection, really. That's how people just don't know what's what, you know. James Joyce is intellectual, you know. John's is... something that really came from his body, you know, more than his mind, or, you know, mind as well, but mind is part of his body. But what I mean is, it just really gets you, you know, and it's kind of book that you don't just read sitting back, but your whole body goes into it, you know, and it's like his songs, and his songs like Help, you know. Help is one, the early ones I like is Help, Strawberry Fields Forever. Strawberry Fields is the first song that I came across of the Beatles, of John's as well. I went into this, some artist party, you know, sort of cocktail party type of party, and then an art critic was saying, Yoko did... Well, because he knows that I don't know anything about pop songs in those days. And he said, oh, look, have you ever heard this one? And he just played this single, Strawberry Fields, you know? And he said, well, you know, if the pop world starts to do something like this, it's the end of the world or something, you know, because, you know, what they do in Strawberry Fields, where in the end of it, they make sort of strange, sort of unworldly sounds, you know, and yes, this isn't pop, you know, it's sort of something that transcends that, you know, it's like pretty mind music, you know. And I was thinking pop is something that you dance to or whatever. Well, my idea of pop was very, you know, sort of shallow, understanding it was shallow.
Much of it was at that time.
You know.
Much of it was, exactly.
Right, right.
And there was very little.
And I thought, what is this? You know, I mean, it's almost something that you would hear, you would expect, you know, Stockhausen or something like that to do. And that's how I got into it. So I still have a very strong nostalgia for Strawberry Fields, you know. And then Help is a song that I like because it's something, you know, I see in it something that's not just happy-go-lucky, you know, smiley pop singer bit, you know? Help really says something that, well, I wrote this. Another thing that's very funny is that there's such a similarity between John's images and mine before we met each other. You know, in my series of letter instructions, you know, meaning, you know, giving instructions by letter, you know, there's one that is a letter that sent to somebody saying help with the message, you know, and there's a painting in three stanzas, you know, that I did called Help, and one is sort of like a thick canvas, you know, that's sort of coming out of the wall, like a very big thick thing, you know? And that's called Help, Help. And the next one says Help, and it's sticking out from the wall a little bit less, you know? Sort of like a bit shallower. And then the next one doesn't say Help anymore, there's just an exclamation mark. And there's a dotted line of the painting on the wall, like the painting disappeared completely. And which means, you know, it's almost like when somebody's drowning and saying, help, help first. And then the next minute, he's so drowned, he can't say anymore, but say help. And then next moment, he's completely drowned and you don't see him and he doesn't utter a word, you know. And I have that image. And so he writes, you know, so John writes a song called Help, and I was doing that in painting. And then there was this, you know, he was doing in a book, but he had an illustration of it, but a person with lots of flies on, remember?
No flies on Frank.
Yeah, you know, and then here I had this image, you know, of fly before I met John, you know, this thing about fly crawling off the body and all that. This was an instruction, film instruction that I made a long time ago. And then there were other things like that, you know, I was talking about 1,000 suns rising, and then he told me about, he did drawings, you know, of many, many suns at the same time in the sky, and showed it to a teacher in art school or something, and they said it was ridiculous or something, you know, you don't have many suns at the same time in the sky, you know, I mean, they didn't understand the surrealism of it, of course, and so he suffered a lot, you know, with his sort of crazy surrealistic mind he had, you know, and he couldn't cope with people, he couldn't communicate on that level, you know, and I suffered a lot too, but
well, what happened at that time, of course, with that lyric and with the thought in mind and the way to have people hear that lyric and understand it, and Dylan was into some things and they were into it, they changed the complexion of the entire pop music structure. It's no longer just considered pop or just music to dance to or a musician. No one questions Chuck Berry as a musician. The material that Chuck Berry or a guitarist of that time was very basic lyric. It was I love you and you love me and here we go rocking.
Mm.
But
happy go lucky.
Right. It was there really to dance to. I mean, the fact that he and other people like him, Chuck Berry, would open the door for people to enjoy pop, but it took minds to make it more creative and more imaginative. That's the thing that's happening today on the radio, for instance, at our station. The reason we're becoming so popular is instead of inane, non-meaningful lyrics and only a beat and melody, it's possible to play a 20-minute selection that's total in its thing for your imagination, whether you like it or whether you understand it.
In
what it was meant to be as a total thought. As in a painting, most people will go to any art gallery and they won't understand it.
Yeah.
They'll say, I sort of like it, or yes, or they'll look and you could, you know, it takes weeks and weeks to look at something and really understand maybe most of what was meant in that particular painting.
Yes, Scott, but see, you don't have to necessarily understand consciously, you know. On the conscious level, you don't understand it, but physically or in your subconscious, you do take it, you know, you absorb it anyway, you know. And you do absorb it, you know. So that's all right. But it's pretty hard.
I wish you could see the painting in my office, which is not on the wall.
Yeah.
It's been put behind a cabinet to rest there forever. No one will let it hang because everyone is frightened of it.
Oh, really?
But it's a basic painting. I could tell you very briefly, and then you have to figure out what the artist meant. There is a baby, probably a little girl of a year, about a year old, and she is sitting on the floor of a room in the home, surrounded by huge rats.
Oh, okay.
And the rats are moving toward her, and out the window is a scene of the mother and father being taken away in a truck by obvious uniformed men. More than likely, uniform denotes, I would think, in the part of the artist,
a black
country. I don't know.
Because, yeah, just immediately that image came to me. Because, you know, I think the blacks and the female race, you know, really share that insecurity because of the suppression they go through, you know, in society. And I really have that feeling, you know, sympathy.
The other thing is a train in the background, way off in the background, of cattle cars, of people being loaded into cattle cars.
Well, I've been through, having my child in one arm and living in an apartment in New York where we had rats and things like that. So I went really through the bottom, you know, of on the society. It's frightening, isn't it? Yeah, but what I wanted to say was the Beatles, what the Beatles did was very clever, I thought. You know, they didn't first slam that surrealistic stuff on them first, you know, I mean, to the audience. They first sort of cultivated the communication media with I Want to Hold Your Hand, you know, and then made them get a bit more relaxed and opened, and then, you know, and then made them accept their other things, you know, like surrealistic ones and all that. And I'm trying to go a step further and trying to make a society where everybody will realize that they're artists, you know, because I think there's two classes still in this society. One is a class that can't communicate, and the other is a class that's communicating, you know. And because there's some people who believe in communication, who believe they can communicate, and they have the talent to communicate, and others who don't think that they can communicate, you know, who don't believe that they can communicate. And it's a lot of artists. I think everybody can communicate. Everybody's an artist. And artist, being an artist is just a frame of mind. And once you adopt a certain frame of mind, you can do anything. You don't need talent to do anything, you know. You can do it. And that's what my book Grapefruit is about. After you read that book, you see, you realize how easy to be an artist. And they send me letters saying, oh, Yoko, now I see that I'm an artist too. I mean, it doesn't take very much to be an artist. I mean, here's my instructions, you know. And they send me instructions, beautiful. And that's what I'm trying to do. When they come to the show in circus, they will see that it really doesn't take a lot to be an artist, you know. And you know, about the messages that McLuhan's saying, medium is a message. But I say that message is the medium, you know. Whatever message you have, if you have a message, that's it. You can express it in your own way, with your own bag. And the way you express it.
Yeah, I'd just like to go back to the Chuck Berry business. It's one of my all-time favorites. And I personally think that Barry was writing lyrics on a par with anything that was written subsequently. I think he was one of the great rock poets in very early days when people were still what Bopper Lumin, which I still appreciate. But Barry's lyrics were especially avant-garde in the meter of the wording. It was the meter of the way he got the words together. And he wasn't singing, I know he sang a lot about his chicks and his young girls that he loved, but he really sang a lot about contemporary social life. And he sang about his cars and, you take a stone satisfaction or get off my cloud. Barry was writing the same kind of thing in those days, which was, he was showing, that sort of, this is intellectualizing him a little bit, he was showing that grasping capitalist necessity, the big car, I want a car with a $40 thing, and all those songs he wrote about the cars, he was so involved in, like the kids were in those days.
Sure, and Johnny Be Good.
He wrote about himself, he wrote about his experiences with women, he wrote about his experience in society with buying motor cars and the gear he'd get on it. His wording was fantastic, the meter of his lyrics was unbelievable, and it was as good as any E.E. Cummings or Shakespearean poetry that had ever come across. And if you listen to Dylan's Highway 61 album, you hear Chuck Berry's meter throughout. Dylan, especially when he went electric, like Dylan sort of turned us on in a way to words, and we and our crew turned him on to electricity. I remember Joan Baez coming to us and saying, since he met you, he got an electric guitar and he never stopped singing Blue Suede Shoes, right? So Dylan was obviously influenced by all that, but especially by Berry's meter in the songs. If you listen to Dylan's meter in Highway 61 album, you just hear, Johnny Be Good and all the car songs that were, and of course on the Beatles things too. The meter of his words was the whole thing, not necessarily what he's saying. Another thing about rock and roll, because I think rock and roll said as much as anything else did. Yeah. I really think Tutti Frutti or Long Tall Sally was just pure social comment. And I think the Yoko's style of music, the thing that interests me, when I listen to Mine Train or Midsummer New York, but especially something like Mine Train, it gives me the same kind of turn-on I used to get with Heartbreak Hotel, You don't know what she's saying half the time. You get the lyrics on the sheet if you want them, but the lyrics are secondary to the sound she's making. And for Yoko to, like on Mine Train, she's going, dub, dub, train, dub, dub, train, things like that. It's the same feeling that you had on Wop Bop Aluma or Block Bamboo, It was just a sort of total feeling that was coming across from the record and not literally what was said, Although I'm a great literary, one for saying things, in words, I still appreciate the pure sound words of those early rock records.
It's very interesting that he started to bring out about the meters, because John has a very strange sense of meter. It's so unique, It's totally his own style of metering, And like George Harrison and all them, we say, what? Oh, that way. And they just can't, keep it up with it, no way.
Because I find it hard to keep to a straight rhythm of four in a bar,
What is straight,
I really have crazy rhythms in my head. But I think Berry's thing was a natural thing that he came about. He had the sort of 12-bar thing going underneath me, but he would cram all these words, Somebody just sent us a bowling ball. From Alex Bennett.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's the water event.
Is that the water event? Mm-hmm. I see.
Well, anyway, so I learned a lot about rock from John, because I didn't know anything about rock, right? And Elvis Presley, I don't know if it's early or late, but one or two songs he played on the record, and I thought, very interesting. Because as my operatic training came in, and I just listened to it as the way Elvis does his breathing, the way he does his vocal, uses his vocal cord and all that was very interesting. I thought, that's another strange technique, So I adopted that in Midsummer New York, because I thought that song, the lyrics, really needed that kind of breathing method.
What about Mine Train?
Mine Train, I didn't think in terms of that. I thought, how did I think of it? Well, it was...
Yeah, I gave her the train back in the car, straight from Misty Train. I explained to her about all, the very Johnny early. Burnett's Lonesome Train, there's Elvis's Mystery Train, there was the early Railroad Bill and all the old work songs. I explained, she was always interested in train kind of songs, and I told her about all these early songs. So when she wanted to do a train song, I just updated dun 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 dun. It used to be on Mystery Train.
She did say that, but I didn't know
it.
That one, you know, it was the train song.
It's sort of updated Mystery Train.
I didn't hear the Mystery Train.
No, she's never heard Mystery Train, but I'll play it one day.
I would like it.
Well, Mystery Train was just before his big, success. It preceded the long string of million sellers. So
well, why not play some of mine trains? They play about 5 minutes of that, and then play Mystery Train, and then when we're listening to it, you get to hear
well,
the
I like to hear the Mystery Train, because